You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. I have sworn to Cody that I will keep this one short because our Shop Talk podcast went like an hour and 20 minutes, and I think he's going to have a full-blown aneurysm from editing. But we have a new to all of you person who's going to be a regular on all of these podcasts that we just wanted to do a quick intro to so y'all could get to know him. And when you hear that voice in upcoming podcasts, you'll be like, oh, that's that guy. Have a little bit of familiarity with him. But we were super happy as the Guides Association continues to expand and strengthen and grow and enter new areas. I was introduced to my guest, Scotty Davis, probably like a year ago. And he was working at a place. Him and Blaine had been long-term friends. And Blaine introduced me to him, and I was just trying for a long time on the struggle bus with Blaine, trying to figure out how to bring Scotty on board to the Guides Association. And things finally lined up a few months ago. And he's our, he's going to be our kind of South Atlantic regional development and outreach person for the Guides Association. So Scotty, how are you doing today, buddy? And tell everyone kind of a little bit about your background and where you come from, and we'll get into where we want to go.
Yeah, man. Good morning. I am currently in Charleston, South Carolina. I've been here since college. I grew up in Columbia, just up the road. Used to skip school and come down here, so it was kind of a natural place for me to end up. Worked at a bunch of bars and tackle shops and things like that through the years, just mainly to support the fishing habit, as most of us do. Ended up starting my own fly shop after, you know, working for other people just got to be too much. So I started my own fly shop for about 10 years, Low Country Fly Shop. We were in Mount Pleasant. I did some about 15 years of guiding here as well. I guided in Alaska as well. Mountain trout bum, you know, panfish addict, just all around misfit, I guess.
You got some good stories from Alaska, man.
Yeah, a lot of them are not tame enough for the air.
Well, you and I, if there's one thing we have in common, we enjoy the cold about as much. You and I like the cold about as little as humanly possible. I would rather be in a convection oven than anything under 30 degrees.
Yeah.
That was one way that we bonded, because you came to DC and we actually got to hang out for a little bit. That was one of our bonding experiences, was our absolute unabashed hatred of the cold. And if I remember correctly from our conversation, you used to actually leave Alaska before it got cold when you were a guide.
It was already too cold by the time I left, but I would try to be out of there before like the first snow stuck on the ground, at least. It just affects me differently. At least my blood's too thick or too thin, or I mean, even DC when we were there, it wasn't even snowing yet, and I was dying. I had to borrow the Louisiana dude's jacket, you know, and everything I had on. Of course, come to find out, I was deathly ill and didn't really realize it.
So, it was amazing. You and I were the only ones who were struck down from, I thought that was gonna go around like a bad case of typhoid, man. That knocked me flat on my ass for like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah,
it was brutal.
I mean, I do get sick. Everybody gets sick, but I never really miss school because of it. I don't miss work because of it. But I couldn't get out of the bed for that. That one, I was down.
Oh, it was whatever it was. I don't want it again. I hope I have developed an immunity towards whatever special kind of hell that was. I'd say if that cold was an insect, it would have been a chigger. You know, because it really. That's the only thing that's nasty and horrible enough that I would say was that thing. So, you know, unfortunately you got a little sick in DC, but, you know, tell us about like living in Charleston a little bit. You know, obviously we've had these conversations. My mom used to live there before she passed away. I'm pretty familiar with Charleston and kind of like that culture, but what are you seeing out of the fishery, Scotty? Like what brought you to us for the conservation and, you know, you guided for so long.
Yeah.
Mainly, sure. It's definitely where your heart is and where your home is. Like, what are you seeing?
For sure. Well, if anybody's been here or even read about it, the Lowcountry is a pretty special place as far as redfish goes. I mean, we got redfish from Texas to hell, probably Maine by now. But the combination of the Spartina grass, the barrier islands, and the average 5 to 6 foot tides here, which just replenishes everything on a 6 hour cycle, is real unique. When I started fly fishing the flats, it was not many people doing it. Not that I'm ancient and by no means the first one to do it, but it was not crowded. And it slowly got crowded, which is good. We want more people to appreciate it and see why it's worth protecting. And on the other hand, Charleston is one of those places that is a wonderful place to live. People are moving here at breakneck speeds. And this development is encroaching pretty close to these marsh areas. So you'll see a golf course come in right on the banks of what used to be woods. And then within 2 years, that's no longer a redfish flat. The grass has grown up. The mud's different. The crabs are gone. And I talked to a buddy of mine that's a fisheries biologist, and he linked it into walking into a smoke-filled room. You know, if you're a non-smoker and you walk into a cigarette-filled smoke room, it chokes you out and you just leave. And that's what's happening when all this stuff is washing back into the marsh, you know, and pesticides and all the stuff I don't really know about. But it's just not the rapid expansion. I can just see that being a potential problem here. It is a problem, but you know, that was one of the things that I'm interested in is not necessarily habitat loss, but encroachment. A big thing going on here now with the Charleston water keepers is all the septic tanks that people are putting in too close to the water. So they're saying that's a big ongoing issue as well. It's a real conservation minded community though. I know I've worked at tackle shops since I was a kid, and not many people go out and limit out on a daily basis. I mean, there's plenty of people that do, but not on a daily basis. You know, even most of your guide community is pretty, we're not hanging them on nails anymore at the marina to try to gain business, if you know what I mean. But it's a real unique place and a real unique community and pretty tight knit.
Oh, it's tight knit.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it is super tight knit in Charleston. And I think one of the things that's really unique is, you have the food, the culture, the history, you know, the historic part of Charleston is just incredibly charming. You walk down the street, the Spanish moss, everything, you know, you feel like you're stepping back in time. And I think another thing that's pretty crazy about Charleston are those tides. I'll tell you what, man, I wouldn't want to come back as a periwinkle snail or a hermit crab, man, or a fiddler crab, dude. I'd sit, you know, watching that tide come in. And you know, I explained to you where my mom's house was, man, that tide would come in on that big grass flat. The king tide would come in. Man, them little snails would be up on top of that blade of grass going back and forth. Look like me on a deer stand in the marsh, yeah, on those scrub pines with the wind blowing. They're like on a teeter totter. And you could, if you listen real close, you could hear their screams, man. I mean, you know, just waited an hour too long to get the hell out of Dodge. And then you see that grass kind of move, and you know them reds are up on that flat. And I used to just do it, you know, Scotty, like I know, you know exactly where they were. And I used to just do it as country could be, you know, like a 14-foot 10 boat. And I'd get a little trolling motor and just go right across the creek and slide it right up on the flat, get a little stool up on the bow and just watch waves of them come in that grass. It's pretty cool. Like I love Louisiana too. But that's a totally different fishery. Fishery.
It really is. And since my son's gotten to be a little bit older, he's 10 now, I've gotten kind of back to wading, which was kind of my roots. Like you said, get a little John boat just to get you there. And once you can get to those hard bottom flats, you just get out and walk around and he loves it. And I love that he loves it. So, but you're right. Louisiana, when I used to guide here, people would show up and I'd say, "Hey, you ever caught a redfish before?" They're like, "Yeah, I used to fish in Louisiana." I'd be like, "Oh, damn. No, you're not going to catch 30. You're not going to probably even catch 20 because it's a much different fishery. You know, our fish are kind of resonance. Those fish that, like you said, they're waiting to get on that flat. Those same fish are waiting that next day to get on that same flat. They don't really leave that river system and wander around like they do in that big Louisiana marsh. It's a little bit more challenging in that aspect that we're kind of educating these fish daily by going in there and catching them. But that's kind of the joy of it.
I'll tell you, one of the cool fisheries that y'all have that I'm sure some people know about, but some people aren't familiar with, are those monster jacks in Charleston Harbor. Do y'all still have those?
Actually, they show up like clockwork now. We had a period when they had rediverted the Cooper River. So the Charleston Harbor has two or three major rivers that come in it. They rediverted the fresh water and the jacks didn't show up for, God, I don't remember how many years it was, 10 or 15 years maybe. And then I'd say maybe 5-10 years ago, they started showing back up a little bit and people are starting to do those again. They are monsters. I'd say 30 pounds is rough average, and they're definitely getting bigger than that. They daisy chain out there like big permit. It's pretty rowdy. It's kind of like Albie fishing a little bit, where if too many people are out there, you're like, "Ah, man, we might as well just go. This is going to get ugly," because there's only a few real spots that people target them. So it definitely gets popular. Things like that. We also have a good shad fishery, which is pretty fun to do this time of year. American shad run comes up that same river too.
Americans are awesome.
Yeah.
Hickories get we have a like biblically good hickory shad run, but you know, man, after you catch like 50 of them the first day, it's kind of like, it's, you know, okay, it's a 2-pound hickory shad, man. Those Americans, they get big, dude. Like, that's a whole different deal.
Right. Yeah. So the variety here is good. The tarpon fishery's gotten a lot better over the years as well. I'm not sure what to do that to, but it's better.
I know totally understanding that we're the American Saltwater Guides Association, and I'm probably going to make 20% of the people turn off the podcast right now, but my God, does South Carolina have some crappie fishing? Holy jeez. Oh my God. God, there's a lot to do. I mean, there's just, you can get lost in those marshes and the rivers. And, you know, sight fish those grass flats. You can, you know, frankly, you can go at low tide if you can find out where all the redfish pile up, and you can blind cast them at low tide if you get bored. And then you also have, like, you know, Foley's Island and stuff, where you can go out to the ocean side and wade. And that's kind of like God knows what you're going to catch out there, right? I mean, did you spend time wading out there?
Just messing around, just kind of figured out. And a buddy of mine, Michael Bruner, actually kind of figured out a little bit before me and took me down there and showed me around. But if you can get there after lunch when the sun's behind you, you get this, you can see in the waves a lot better instead of going early mornings, which was kind of the mistake I was making. I couldn't see the fish in the waves. And I was casting, you know, I was trying to make 40-foot casts when I need to be roll casting 10 feet off the sand. So they're like those Florida snook. They're coming right in that first little, second little wave breaking. So that was real fun. That was a late summer, kind of early fall type gig. But that's real doable, and nobody's really doing that. There might be, I could maybe name four or five people I know that, that actually fly fish the beach.
It's pretty dynamic. Like mm-hmm. the whole fishery, you know, it is a 12-month out of the year fishery. You can always find something to catch in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Tell, you know, you are one hell of a storyteller. I feel like I am selling our audience short by not putting myself on mute and just saying, pick a story, enlighten me. Don't care if it's from Alaska, South Carolina, wherever. But there's got to be, you know, Blaine. I'll pump your tires a little bit, Blaine. Blaine and me and Kyle and Cody went off for 45 minutes about all the species that we figurated. I think I won because I figurate flounder when I weighed. And the rest of them were like musky and whatever. I'm like, I got all y'all beat. I figurate flounder. And then everyone was quiet. So I'll just tell you that our audience is used to us talking about God knows what. So, you know, I hate putting you on the spot, but I know who you are and I know how many stories you got. I just want to give people a little idea about your personality because they're going to hear a lot more of you out on the podcast.
Yeah. I was a bartender for like 15 years so that I could fish most of the day. And I think that helped me, you know, just deal with all different types of people, right? But everybody's kind of there for the same reason. Everybody's there to have a good time, right? Same thing with the fly shop. Same thing with going fishing. We're all different. We all might have different beliefs, but we're really all there for the same reason. We're addicted to fishing, right? And that's what we're passionate about. That's what we love. So that's the common ground. And it's pretty easy to find. You know, people, there's some weird people I've fished with over the years, and there's some really awesome people too. And we're all, you know, bound by that misfit fisherman cloth, you know. I had a guy come in, he kept calling, and I was like, man, I don't know if I want to take this guy. He seems so weird. He wanted me to take him and his paddleboard out to a flat, kind of tell him how to do it. He's never been red fishing. Tell him how to do it and then leave him alone. But to stay within like phone call range or a couple hundred yards away. So if he needed something, I'd come back and get him. He's like, you can go fish yourself. And I was like, well, my first thought was this guy's going to come back with a paddleboard. You know, he's going to be in my spots all these days. So I didn't really want to do it, but I ended up taking him, booking him. I got his name, and it ended up being on a pretty busy week. All the guys were booked that week through the shop. And, it was when that show Pirates of the Flats had just come out. It was pretty popular, you know, and I loved that show. It was great. And Michael Keaton came in the shop. I didn't have too many famous people come in the store, but Keaton came in. So I was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? He's like, well, I came to fish. I was like, awesome, man. Who's taking you? He's like, you are. And I was like, oh man, I'm booked. I can't take you. I wish I could. I can't cancel these people. I'm sorry. He said, well, I'm John Smith. And I was like, you're that weird dude with the paddleboard? And he's like, yes, sir. So I had to convince him. I was like, I'll take you on your paddleboard. But I guess he didn't want to book it under his name, which is understandable. But I talked to this guy like for hours on the phone, you know, just not knowing who it was. You know, not that I would have talked to him any differently.
That's funny as shit. So it was the weird paddleboard guy was Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And he almost told him to like to go pound sand.
I did tell him. I was like, I can't take you. You know, he said, well, I'm so-and-so. Then it all came clear. And I was like, oh man. So then I got, you know, that's my childhood Batman. You know, you're about my age. That was our Batman. You know? So I got excited to call my wife. Called my wife and everything. I come home, my dumbass neighbor standing in my yard drinking beer. And he's like, I heard you're taking Val Kilmer fishing. How old are you, dude? Like, oh, Beetlejuice, man. Beetlejuice. They're redoing Beetlejuice. I hope he's in it. But he's a fantastic guy, man. He really was. He talked to everybody at the boat ramps who wanted to talk to him. He was a hammer. He caught seven fish. I showed him seven. He caught seven. Was a super nice guy, man. He really was. It was an honor. But
Well, that is the story that I was looking for. I have a funny one too. I'll just say I was in Lefty's office, and man, it was a long time ago, and his phone rang, and I don't want to get, it was very wealthy people. And they were basically, they were offering Lefty to get on their jet and fly to their estate and to teach them how to fly fish. And Lefty thought it was a joke. And he goes, "Who is this, Clouser?" And he just hung up on him. And I'm like, "What was that?" And he's like, "Clouser's playing a trick on me." And the phone rang like 10 seconds later. And they were like, "Hey, Lefty, why'd you hang up on us?" And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "They're like, no, this is so-and-so. And we'd like you to, yeah, we'd like to send our jet to Baltimore and pick you up, and we'll pay you to be here for, we want to learn how to fly fish." And he looked at, he like put his hand over the phone. You know, there wasn't a mute button back then. And he's like, "Holy shit, I think this is real." I was like, "Is this happening? You know, did you actually just hang up on this person?" And he's like, "Yeah, I did." So like, it, anyway, I won't say who it was, but I will say this, they're wealthy enough to where by the time that plane took off from where they lived and it picked up Lefty, they probably made enough interest on their holdings to buy another plane. And Lefty couldn't believe that was who it was. You know, and the incredible thing, you're talking about like Thomas McGuane and like our Batman, Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler and Huey Lewis in the news. And all of these people who are like stars in their own world and in their own right. And I'll tell you what, dude, when Lefty walked in the room, they shut the F up.
Yeah, man.
And listened to him. And let me tell you, Lefty could make fun of them too. And they took it, right?
Yeah. He could command a room, man. And he is sorely missed by everybody that ever met him.
Oh, God. There'll never be another one.
He could command a room for sure.
Oh, my God. It, like, he's, you know, fly fishing in general, bunch of, you know it all, a little bit arrogant. There's a lot of money rolling around the room. And I'll tell you what, man, he's the only guy I ever met where everyone shut the F up when Lefty walked in the room, because you didn't want to be the, if he could read you in 2 seconds, and if you a little bit too big for your britches, he'd put you in your place faster than you could blink.
That's the thing.
And yeah.
Total opposite of Flip. You know, he's another guy right up there. Flip Pallets, you know, he would never talk to somebody, you know, he commands a room in a different type of way. They have the same respect levels, but Flip just commands a little differently. He's so calm, you know, and laid back. At a photo shoot for Southern Cultural on the Fly, one of the photographers went up to him and goes, "Hey, you're Flip Pallet." He turns around and goes, "I'm what's left of Flip Pallet." It's like, God, that is some cool shit right there. Can't wait to
grow up and say stuff like Lefty, that. You know? Lefty was doing and then just to show that he was the complete opposite, he's doing this presentation, and it was somewhere in Pennsylvania. I can't remember, and I can't remember why I was there with him. It's just one of those things that like I can't put all the pieces back together at this point in my life. But they couldn't get the projector to work and connect to the laptop, and you tell Lefty, you know, I wouldn't say he's losing his patience, but he was just like, you know, this is gonna suck. And he didn't know, you know, there was kind of that awkward 30 seconds of silence, and he just kind of turned around to the room, and he was like, "Hey, how about I tell some Polish jokes?" You know, because it's Pennsylvania. And these two dudes stood up, man, and they were as big as refrigerators. And they're like, "Hey, we're Polish." And dude, I mean, didn't miss a beat, looked them dead in the eye from across the room. And he goes, "That's okay. I'll just tell the joke real slow for you." And about pissed myself. Like, I was like, man, this guy is unbelievable. Like, you know, so anyway, y'all, I promise Cody's going to kill me. We're 29 minutes into this. We're going to shut it down, but Scotty Davis, y'all are going to be hearing a lot more from him. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, he's going to be on our new little shop talk feature. We're going to be talking about Redfish, about apps, you know, about collecting data and better science and how to manage all these fish in the South Atlantic better. We had to find the right person. And in my heart of hearts, I believe that we have. So, you know, Scotty, look forward to working with you in 2024. Formally welcome to the team. And we're going to be doing this a lot more, man. So thank you for joining us, buddy.
Yeah, man. I'm happy to be here.